Good morning. Welcome back to the Broadcast Retirement Network. This is BRN AM for Monday, April 22nd, 2024. At our top story today, understanding the five stages of grief. And joining me now to discuss this and a lot more, Andy Langford is the clinical director at the Cruz Bereavement Support. Andy, it's so great to see you. Thanks so much for joining us on the program this morning.
Oh, thank you, Jeffrey. It's a real pleasure to be here.
Yeah, and I should say it's the morning here in the U.S., the afternoon in the U.K. in West London. Andy, I want to start with some basics before we get into the five stages of grief. What is grief? How would you describe grief to, you know, we all experience it, but how do you define grief?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, often people find it hard to define it. The reason is because it's so unique. So we will all experience grief differently. And upon each significant loss, whether that's the loss of a person who's close to us, or whether that could be other significant losses, like loss of a job or home, for instance, we'll have different experiences of those, and they will also vary over time. Grief broadly is the experience that we have as a result of having a significant loss, and it's usually associated with death. And that experience can affect us, or it can incorporate our emotional side, so what we feel. It includes our thoughts and how we think. It also includes our physicality. So grief has a profound effect on our bodies in a number of ways.
Yeah.
It also includes how we behave. And lastly, I would say, it can also include what life means to us. And for those of us who have a faith, it can also have an influence on how we perceive the world in terms of our faith too.
Yeah. And you know, it's one of those emotions that I think we all have dealt with. You mentioned job loss, you mentioned death. Some of those things are so final and so transitional, really hard to argue with it, but there's a real sense of loss. Andy, you mentioned that there can be different timelines associated with grief. Can you share, for someone maybe who hasn't had the grief emotion for a long time, what's the timeline typically for grief?
Sure, it's a really good question. And we're often asked this at Cruz, and usually it's by people who are trying to support someone who's experienced a death. And it's with a good heart. Broadly, what we say and what the research tells us is that there is no set timeline for grief. So we may experience quite acute feelings around the death of someone close, for instance, quite soon after the death. For some of us, though, we might feel quite numb because it might be a shock. It might be something we can't fully process because we're busy with other things like sorting out finances, you know, a house, childcare, for instance, if the death has been a death of a partner. So because each experience is unique, then the times at which we have those different emotions and thoughts and feelings in our bodies, they differ too. But the other thing I would add as well is that we know that the grief we experience, it can be triggered at other times in our lives. So, you know, you might have experienced the death of someone close a couple of years ago, but then actually something today, walking down the street or on transport, or, you know, something you might smell or see or hear, something you might taste, actually it reminds you of the person who's died. And some of those experiences come flooding back. So There's no set time in terms of how we experience grief.
Yeah, you bring up the sense of smell or just a recollection. And I actually personally have gone through that where I recollect a loved one or even a close friend. And you're right, it does trigger those emotions. How do you recognize, so if you're a caregiver or a family member, and maybe it's not, or an extended family member, can you recognize the signs of grief in someone who is grieving? If you don't know, for example, that they lost a job, lost a loved one, or they're experiencing, you know, total emotional distress, can you externally look at somebody and determine if they're grieving?
Sure. So we at Cruz would actually phrase it in a or frame it in a slightly different way.
Sure.
So you're more likely to be able to recognize what's going on for someone if you're in relationship with them. Now, that relationship obviously varies. So the relationship I have with my nearest and dearest is very different than the relationship I've got with the person behind the counter at our local corner shop and supermarket, right? But it can still be a compassionate relationship. You know, you can still say hi to people, you can still behave in a compassionate and loving way, right? You can still be open to a conversation. And it's at those contact points when you might be able to detect there's something different. And it's then about asking what's going on for you. Jeffrey, how are you doing today? You know, communicating that you're there to listen and be available is just so important. Because actually, as we know, if we all experience in loss and grief differently, then a loss that you experience, it might be something that you feel actually at that time you're okay to cope with, and so it might not be so obvious. But actually, I might experience the same loss, but be processed it very differently. It might profoundly affect me at that point in time, and it's very clear that I am affected by it. Both of us may need support at different times, and the support we need might be different. So, you know, one of the best things we would say is actually, as an individual, be open and prepared to have a conversation and communicate that you're there for someone if they need you.
Yeah, and it's that empathy that is so important, and being aware and in tune with someone else's feelings and emotions. Andy, I need to take a very quick break. When we come back, we'll talk more about the stages of grief and a lot more. You're going to want to stay tuned right here on DRN AM. Imagine a new television network that will make you richer, healthier, and in control of your financial future. This network is for the policewoman in Nashville, Tennessee, the baker in Dubuque, Iowa, the teacher in Lexington, Kentucky. We want to make the idea of savings and retirement culturally relevant. But what do you see as a defining issue of the midterms? Especially for the smaller businesses, I mean, they are the lifeblood of the American economy. Featuring exclusive interviews, current affairs, and docuseries. 33 years old, you retired early.
The philosophy is money only matters if it helps you live a life that you love.
But you gotta start thinking about retirement as soon as you get in.
The Broadcast Retirement Network will drive very high engagement with premium partnerships. So this isn't retirement and savings for your parents or grandparents. This is for all Americans. And we're gonna change the way you think about money. Welcome to the next frontier of retirement and savings. This is BRN, the Broadcast Retirement Network.
Andy, thanks so much for staying with us. Really appreciate hanging around for segment number two this morning.
It's a pleasure. No problem, Jeff.
I have a question that I was just thinking about in between, actually while you were talking in segment one, and I meant to get it in segment one, but I want to ask you, is grief specific to humans, mammals? Do other species of animal experience the same level of grief and the five stages?
So there's a few things I'd want to draw out there, really. The first is that we know most about grief in humans because that's what's been researched most. And it's what, even though we might have difficulties in lots of our cultures in talking about grief amongst people, it is what we tend to talk about most. So yes, there's definitely, for humans, there is grief. There is not a linear process, like a straightforward process of going through different stages of grief that you may have encountered or those viewing may have encountered those models that say 5, 6, 8, 10, 20 odd stages of grief, they're actually not that straightforward. And we can talk a little bit about that as much as will be helpful. But actually, what we do know is that other species experience grief too. So, and they experience it commonly by exhibiting behaviors that are like searching behaviors. So, if a dog has lost its owner, then the dog will continue to search for its owner. But they'll make some noises that indicate they're distressed. Cats will do the same. In fact, what we'd see is that sheep and whales and dolphins, they all exhibit behaviors of searching, and they make particular noises when other companions in their species, in their flock or grouping, are no longer there. And this is behavior that is sort of not dissimilar for us as human beings, but it's our brand or version of that, just looks different. So yes, other species do exhibit mourning behaviors, but a mourning is broadly how we are trying to process that death of someone close. And it can include searching, it can include grieving as well.
Animals are so perceptive, and they're so pure in how they express themselves. They want to eat, they want to be with their owner, etc. Andy, you mentioned that the stages of grief may not be linear. What did you mean by that? And you talked about there is no set timeline. Can you talk a little bit more about how you can experience the different stages at different times?
Yeah, absolutely. So going into a bit of detail about this, the stages of grief is one of the most well-known models. Actually, it's been around since the 1960s, and the research behind it was absolutely groundbreaking. And what it was based on the researchers having conversations with people who weren't grieving, but were actually approaching their own death. They were going through the palliative care process. So all of those conversations, really, really important, really vital, really rich. What they were about is someone anticipating what will happen to them when they've died and leading up to the death, and also what will happen to those people who they'll leave behind. Advance a few decades.
Yeah,
Sorry, go on.
and no, I interrupted you. Finish your thought.
And what we know now is actually a lot more research has been done. A lot more people who are experiencing bereavement have been talked with, and a lot more people have inputted into this. And what we know now is actually that the way in which we experience grief is not going through one stage after another after another. It's more fluid than that. And we tend to broadly move between feeling, experiencing the emotions that are associated with grief, sometimes feeling overwhelmed, even. And then sometimes feeling that imperative, that need to try and carry on, to do our jobs, to look after the children, to care for those we love, to pursue our hobbies and our social interests, to make sure the house is still intact. All of those things that are life things. Whilst at the same time then trying to move and cater for our own emotions and needs. So we move between these two things broadly. It's actually when we get stuck in one is when difficulties most arise. So things like we feel so overwhelmed, we can't get up in the morning, and not just for one morning, but for 5 or 6 mornings. Or actually we know we want to cry, but we just can't. It just won't come. And we feel stuck. And we know we want to talk to that person who keeps asking us day in, day out, how are you feeling, Andy? But the words just don't come. All I can do is get stuck into my work, and that'll keep me safe. So those points of stuckness is when sometimes we'll need a bit more support. And generally, experiencing a bit of both, that's the sort of healthier way, really. It's the more organic way to that we grieve.
Andy, I mean, this has been a fascinating conversation. There's so many questions I'd like to ask you. But in terms of the last question for this segment. Are there things that we can do to preempt or to facilitate our grief? You talked about what others can do. There's empathy, what our pets can do. They can support us by loving us. But are there things that we can do as an individual to help us through the grieving process? Because it sounds like, based on our conversation and your research, that this is individual. So it's Jeff Snyder is going to be different than Andy Langford, or it's going to be different than X, Y, and Z. So are there things that we can do to help preempt or move us through the grieving process in a methodical way?
That's a really, really important and interesting question. We'll probably take a whole day to unpack, but I'll do my best.
We'll have to bring you back, because I think it's fascinating research. Anyway, I didn't mean to interrupt, but do your best to kind of
It's a pleasure. So the first thing we can do is actually something that many of us find really difficult, but it's so, so important. So the research out there states this clearly, and also at Cruise Bereavement Support, our clients, our bereaved people, state this clearly. If you've had a conversation with the person who is going to die, if this is possible, we appreciate that not every death you have that, because some are immediate and some relationships are not straightforward. But if it's possible to have conversations before the death about the person's wishes, the person who's going to die, their wishes, for the funeral, for afterwards, for their estate, for how they want to be remembered, then broadly, for those that are left behind, their grief experience is going to be less problematic. Yeah, it means broadly, it's the troublesome nature of it won't last as long. Broadly, the social connections they'll have between each other will be more supportive, because there's those common understandings. So actually, even though death happens to us and we can't avoid it, what we can do proactively is make sure that those that are left behind are able to remember you fondly and not be encumbered with, yes, there'll be sadness, there'll be anguish, there'll be anger, there'll be pain. But actually, it is possible to foster that support between that group of people whilst you're approaching that death experience. So it's, in a way, it's empowering. It can be empowering for some people. The other thing I would say as well, though, is that actually we can support each other, and that is really important. So it is an individual experience, but it can be a journey that is shared. And in many, many cultures are really, really good at this in terms of sharing the experience of the death of someone close. So it's important that whatever you need, actually, you get that balance of being alone, but also having that time socially where you can connect with those that you can trust and you know have your back.
Yeah. Really, it's a very fascinating conversation we just had. Interesting research. And a lot of it comes down to acceptance, I think. Andy, we're going to have to leave it there. We're going to bring it back, because I think this is one that we will continue to explore. I think we're all interested in this topic, because we're all going to experience it in some way, shape, or form. Andy, so great to see you. Thanks so much for joining us, and we look forward to having you back on the program again very soon.
Fantastic. Thanks, Jeffrey. All the very best.
And that wraps up this episode of BRN AM. Have a topic of interest, someone you think we should talk to? Then drop us a line. And don't forget, for all the latest curated news and lifestyle, wellness, finance, tech, so much more in all in one place, check out today's edition of our daily newsletter, The Morning Pulse. Want to search our archives, check out our latest content? Well, then visit our website. We're back again tomorrow with another edition of BRN AM. We'll have a very special guest, another important topic. Until then, I'm Jeff Snyder. Stay safe. Keep on saving. And don't forget, roll with the changes. Now is your opportunity to co-create content around any topic on the First Lifestyle and Wellness Network. Reach a global audience through our platform and co-own exclusive branded content. All of our programs are available on demand and also as audio-only podcasts, so you can take us on the go. Broadcast Retirement Network, available anytime, anywhere, and on any device.